Welcome to Fresh Coast Jazz Backstage, the show that gives you a chance to hang with today's top contemporary jazz artists. I'm your host, Carl Brown. Welcome to today's episode of Fresh Coast Jazz Backstage, everyone. We really appreciate you listening in. Our guest today is really a musical icon who has cut his teeth in so many different genres of music. We know him more from the contemporary jazz world, but he has played all kinds of music. He is a 12-time Grammy nominee, a Grammy winner. He has over 30 albums to his credit. He has a list of hits that is too long to mention. His music, I was trying to think about, like, how do I personally describe his music? And for me, it's this wonderful, and I'll call it ever-evolving amalgamation of his Memphis roots, his gospel grounding, his life as a citizen of the world, his experience playing all those different types of music all around the world with the best musicians all around the world, and this love of humanity that comes through in his music, if you pay attention and if you listen to what's being said. Me personally, if I could assemble a Mount Rushmore of musicians, he would be right there front and center. Probably sit him next to Stevie Wonder, you know. But today we're excited to have on the show the one and the only Mr. Kirk Whalum. Kirk, thanks for being on, man.
Oh, man. Listen, I will take that seat next to Stevie any day. You know, and he's rocking back
there
and
you
forth.
Go, right?
He's like, hey, man, yeah, but play Falling in Love with Jesus, man.
Yeah.
And I've had the privilege, you know, of being, you know, like I'm playing here or I'm playing there, and he just shows up and like, there's Stevie, please usher him to the stage. He gets right up, he comes up, he says, let's play Falling in Love with Jesus.
That's cool. How many times have you had that experience with him?
I'm going to say three for sure.
Wow.
And maybe more, because sometimes, like, if you're involved, you're doing some kind of other thing. But then, you know, in sound check or rehearsal, you know, he just goes into it. You know, I told Jonathan Butler, I said, man, I assume you know how many people you've impacted with that song, but.
Yeah, that's an amazing song. And yeah, so a song that a lot of people love. But you've done the same with so much of your music. We were talking before we went on air, and I was telling Kirk that he didn't know this, but our Fresh Coast Jazz Festival, of which he will be performing, headlining on the Friday night of our fifth anniversary festival. Kirk didn't know that he was in part one of the impetuses for this festival even starting. My father was passing away from terminal cancer. Before he did, he gave me instructions that in my life, he wanted me to think of others more highly than myself. And after a couple of years of praying about it, talking to my wife about it, wondering what that meant, my wife and I, in September of 2017, were sitting at the Madam C.J. Walker Theater at the Indianapolis Jazz Festival. Kirk was on stage with his brother and John Stoddard, and they were doing Ta-Ta, You Jesus, and my wife leans over, whispers in my ear, and says, this is what we should do to honor your dad's challenge. We should start a jazz festival in Milwaukee and have the proceeds go to charity. And that's how the Fresh Coast Jazz Festival was born.
Man, I'm just overwhelmed by that. I mean, and Milwaukee? I mean, shoot, Al Jarreau. I mean, there's so many amazing, you know, les étoiles, you know, big stars, man, that call that place home, you know. I want to honor your wife, man. What's her first name?
Her name's Nicole.
So I got to honor Nicole right now. Nicole, let's just say that, you know, my wife, I did a TED talk recently, TEDx talk. I talked about this moment in my life where my wife, Ruby, met her when I was 15. She was 14. I'm 65. So that gives you the math. She leaned over to me the day that I got dropped off of Columbia Records years ago. And I was just ready to go straight into my pity party and depression. And she, like, you know, looked at me like this and said, okay, what can you do today that you could do yesterday when you were a Columbia recording artist? It was the biggest comma in my life, man. And I talked this whole story in the TED talk. I talk about how Columbia Records dropped me into my destiny, right? Because that was the thing that I, to answer her question after I, you know, moped around for a while, was that I would do a gospel chord and jazz. And I would call, like, may say no, because they just, why would I do that, condescend to that level? People like Jonathan Butler and George Duke.
You're right.
Jr. and Chalea and Layla Hathaway and Kevin Whalum and John Stoddard. And when I actually did that, chapter 1, 2, 3, and 4, yeah, I won a Grammy. And I never, I don't think I was on a path to win a Grammy when I was on Columbia. So there you have it.
Yeah. It's one of those things. Like, and I say this about our festival all the time. It's like, you know, God giving us beauty for our ashes, right? Like those times when something is, we feel low, but that's the setup that God has given us for the comeback, right? That he's got things prepared already for us, you know?
And how beautiful. Beauty from ashes, man. That's just such a, I think Justo Armario or somebody, Alex Acuña, somebody wrote a song called Beauty for Ashes, group Koinonia.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them. I am familiar with them. Yeah.
Greek word for fellowship. And this was all, you know, Christian musicians. Just so happened, there were also, you know, LA top level studio musicians, Alex, Abraham Laborio and Hadley Hawkinsmith. And they, yeah, they did their own record kind of as a side project. And it changed my life. You know, they're instrumental, mostly instrumental. I think it's all instrumental, basically expression of what it is to love Jesus out here in the mainstream music industry.
And it's an industry that needs it. All industries need it, but it's an industry that needs it too. And that's one thing that, you know, I have to say this. I've been to many of your shows. My wife, again, who you'll meet when you're here in Milwaukee, she used to accuse me of stalking you because if you were within 6 hours, we were getting in the car and we were going to the show, right? And one of the things that I have noticed about your shows and your bands is that there's this kinship, man. It's like this like genuine like energy and affection. I've had Andrea Lisa on the show, and man, when she talks about you, man, her eyes perk up, her whole demeanor changes. Like she has such respect for you, and it seems like that with your whole band. Like, how have you been able to, over all these years, man, you know, foster that kind of a relationship? Because for us as fans, we can see it and feel it.
Yeah, man, thank you so much. And that is, you know, that first of all, you know, to keep a band together that long, the actual same personnel is difficult because, you know, again, if you're Taylor Swift, you can pretty much say, this is my band. Here's the retainer. I'm not going to be playing and doing anything else.
Right.
Our son Kyle played for Kelly Clarkson for 6 years. He maybe 7 years, and then on a TV show and stuff. And then he went on to play with Katy Perry, which he still does. But now he's playing on The Voice and a bass player. And but you know, yeah, in that domain, an artist has that much, you know, what do you call it, the gravitas in that in this. Yeah, you say, well, this is what we're going to do. But, you know, on my level where you're like, man, you're just sort of vying for their space when they're also, you know, Braylon Lacey, my bass player, is MD for Erykah Badu. John Stoddard had his own career, you know. Andrea, of course, is very busy. She's got a new record coming up. Marcus Finney, the drummer, he's playing with Kurt Elling, and he's Kev Moe and all of that, right? So, yeah. It would be great to, you know, think that I could always count on them being there, but
yeah,
sometimes they're not there. But most of the time, I'm fortunate to say they are. And yes, we have a family environment. Like I am the most imperfect band leader that I know. And yeah, they know I love them and, you know, that I make that love tangible. And the respect is there. They know I respect if they have a suggestion, blah, blah, blah. Also trying to incorporate what they do as much as possible into my thing, you know, and this example. But yeah, Kevin, John, they'll also tell you that Marcus too. I mean, we've had them play their song in my set, you know, has got some momentum right now. And, you know, the sort of satellite radio world, you know, water. And she's from New Zealand and, you know, people are loving some Andrea. And so we do one of her songs in all of our sets. So, yes, that's the story.
Yeah, that's awesome, though. And that you can tell it when you're sitting in the audience watching the performance. And that's another thing, too, that I've always enjoyed about you guys. It's like it's I'm curious about what it takes to put on your show, because I know that there is a ton of work. Like it looks almost effortless to those of us on sitting out in the stands watching, right? But I know there's a ton of work that goes into putting on your stage show.
Well, there is. And here's the thing, in the sort of pop jazz, contemporary jazz, smooth jazz, all that stuff mixed into one, there is a fair amount of virtuosity. It's not, unfortunately, prevalent. I mean, I think there's plenty of mediocrity too. But, you know, some of that is okay because, you know, people aren't necessarily wanting to be dazzled by your virtuosity. You know, that's not the point of this music. But we all feel like the path that we were on and that we've been on in my band individually is that we want that. And there's no shortcuts to that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So when I'm talking to you today, I will be practicing these instruments, at least two of them. It's all about the legacy, you know, there's another word I'm looking for, of virtuosity, that we want to be on that page. You know, we want to always be chasing after that thing so that the day we check out of here, we will something, as it were. You know, think of Sonny Rollins, you know, one of my heroes, picture in my bathroom. So, yeah, Sonny Rollins, when he finally couldn't play anymore because he had a pulmonary ailment, he went into a depression. And people, you know, later when they could get him, they interviewed and said, well, you know, what is it that, you know, when he kind of climbed out of it and he's talking, what was it that depressed you? And, you know, was it playing all, you know, with all these places in the world where people know a lot? Was it all the amazing musicians you play with the audiences? He said, yeah, yeah, all that, of course. He said, but the thing that got me was that I couldn't practice
anymore. Ah, yeah, yeah.
So that kind of tells you where the priorities are. Now, admittedly, I'm on the sort of side of this thing called jazz. Don't know how much longer it'll be called jazz, but where, you know, we are more oriented towards, you know, the average listener who has little or no, you know, knowledge of the, you know, the deep lineage of jazz music, you know, back to Miles and further back, you know, Cab Calloway and all of that. Yeah, maybe they don't know that, but they just like the way it makes them feel.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. And that is something that has allowed me to make a very good living doing this. Not the thing that gets me up in the morning to come into the studio and work on stuff. Being that Rollins was talking about, man, I want to be as good. The bar has been set, you know, whether it's Coltrane or Michael Brecker or Chris Potter or Tia Fuller or Jeff Coffin, whatever, the bar is set in terms of virtuosity technique. You say, okay, well, that's that. And I'm just going to always just do this over here. Or you can say, I'm going to constantly point towards that and do what I do.
Yeah. I've heard, you know, I've had other artists that I've had on the show talk about being doing shows with you, being on the same, you know, lineup at a festival or something, and seeing you practicing backstage up until the time you go on and thinking to themselves, oh, my goodness, this is Kirk Whalum. And Kirk Whalum is practicing like this. I got to raise my game, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I hope, you know, I really hope that, you know, that people see me like that. For sure, it's my deep honor to been given the gifts that I have and to try to work on it. But here's the thing. I happen to know very intimately most of my limitations. I'm covering them as I go along. And I also know that I am a slow learner. You know, the one of the reasons that I practice so much is it takes me longer. That's good for some people to hear, because if someone hears me and I sound good to them, they just imagine that, well, he's just bad cat and period. Yeah. So no, I know some people. I'll name one. Everett Hart is a man who works very hard at what he does to bring forth this amazing thing. But I will personally say that Everett's gift, it's almost like his mind works faster than mine. So, and that is the thing, right? We all have a sort of pace at which we execute whatever. And so when I hear him play, I'm hearing like the fast forward version of what I might do. And it's just such a beautiful thing. Then he will come back and say, well, I listen to you and I hear the slow down, more soulful version of what I want to do. So it's like,
yeah, that's wonderful. That's all right. So we last had you on the show about 2 years ago, almost 2 years to the date, in fact. And so I want to know, in the last 2 years, I've heard some rumblings of some new music coming out soon. And I know you've been touring pretty regularly. And last time we had you on, that was shortly after Humanité had been released. So would love to get caught up on what's been going on in your career and your world in that last couple of years.
Yeah, thank you so much. Well, yeah, a lot of that, first of all, the pandemic was devastating. doubles for everybody. But, and I did this series called Dude with Hats. And that was basically me sitting in here in my studio and going like, well, I can't go out. I'm an itinerant musician. I would love to say, oh, yeah, I do these film scores and I do all this music that's, you know, paying me all this mailbox money. So I kind of don't have to go out. No, I actually do. Grace of God, man, and just some situations that are truly miraculous held us together. But one of the things I did was I started just inventing ways, like all of us did, to, you know, to continue to stay in there and stay relevant. And at some point, bring in a little money. But after that, we decided, my management and I, to do a live record. And then we got going down that path again, because my band is amazing, man. So there are nights when I go, why is this not a live record? You know, we're all just pinching each other like, that was freaking amazing, you know. But then the record company, Mac Avenue, they're just like, that would be great. But, and maybe, you know, I would love to see you do that. You know, they're like, but what we need really right now in the marketplace is another Kirk Whalen record that's, you know, in the you know, studio tradition. You know, the sound of it kind of fits in there on watercolors and these other formats better, like the lion's share of my music, gospel, quote, and jazz and that type of thing, which is always live. And so, yeah, we identified a producer. You know, it's always a risk, right? You go, man, I think this is going to be good. I think it's going to work. And sure enough, man, you know, this, I call him a Swiss chocolate, Greg Manning. Proctor. He's Swiss. And this brother brings his, I guess, both sides of his, you know, parentage, lineage, black and the white, the American and the Swiss, into an understanding of my music, and it just lifted it up. I'm just so very excited about this record. It's called Epic Cool.
Oh, man. And it's a live album.
It is not.
That's, oh, it's not. Okay.
And what they wanted, they said, no, we would rather have
gotcha. Okay. They want us. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. But Epic Cool. And when can we expect Epic Cool to come out?
So, mid-May is what they come.
Okay.
There'll be a single out way before then.
Okay.
Single out next month.
That is fantastic.
Mid-May.
Yeah. So, we'll hopefully we'll get to hear some Epic Cool when you're in Milwaukee at the Fresh Coast Jazz Festival in August.
You will.
Awesome.
Yeah. We are actually playing one of the songs already live.
Okay.
Didn't exist. It's a song co-written by my drummer, Marcus Finney.
Uh-huh.
Let's think of his name for a second. It's called MF.
Okay. Okay.
And so we thought that would be a funny double entendre, you know, because he is an MF.
Yeah.
Let Miles Davis speak, you know.
Uh-huh.
But so, yes, that song is a kind of tour de force, you know, kind of complicated. Again, back to the sort of, we are not satisfied with just like, let's just write a nice song.
Uh-huh.
A lot of that on the record. But this particular one here has a lot of sort of, you know, twisting, you know, like riding around the mountain, you know, fall off the edge.
Then you figure another way up the other side of the mountain. That is fantastic. Well, we're looking forward to that. We're looking forward to that. That's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm looking forward to having you guys play some of that music when you guys are here in Milwaukee. And I'll tell you, I always been curious about this. How do you go about determining what your set list is going to be for a show?
Yeah. So as you can imagine, that gets harder and harder the more music you have out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And with me, it definitely, you know, the gospel, quote, and the jazz stuff is kind of in a lane of its own. That's not quite gospel, and it's definitely not, you know, quite jazz, but it has a lot of those elements. So we, you know, try to pick something out of there to play. You know, Falling in Love with Jesus is one that we almost can't not play. I didn't write it. You know, Jonathan Butler came to that, you know, rehearsal session in Los Angeles, you know, those years ago, and said, you know, he said, the song you want me to play, I love. Hey, please, let's do that one. That's called, Forever and Ever. Amen. The title of it escapes me right now. That Kingdom Come.
Okay.
then this other song I had written for him to sing. And I just now wonder whatever happened to that song. Cause he said, yeah, I'm not feeling that one. I was like, you know how it is, like a suit that doesn't quite fit, you know. In terms of singing, I have this praise chorus. I don't know if we could really call it a song. It's something that I have been singing as I hike. And he said, it goes, falling in love with Jesus. I'm like, stop the press. That will absolutely, if you're good with it, I'm sure enough good with it. That'll be on the record. And of course, that sort of afterthought of a song, you know, around the world, man.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like, do you have a feeling or a sense that something is gonna like break so big for certain songs, or is it always just kind of like, you know what? We're good with this. Let's see how the world responds. Do you have a sense sometimes?
Right. So it's always hate to use this terminology, but a crapshoot. Always to divine what is going to happen. You have to feel good about it first. That doesn't always mean they are going to feel good about it. But you have to go with that part, that faith part, or the, you know, self, or just go ahead and put it out there type thing. The message that I would certainly, you know, admonish any young musician, artist, creative, do what you do. Put your stuff out there and don't worry about whether or not they're going to like it, because they're either or they're not. But you're not going to ever know if you don't put it out. You know, yeah, we sometimes, like, for instance, I Will Always Love You. Like, we were touring with Whitney Houston, and we had her repertoire, and then she did the movie, and then there was the song that they wanted her to do in the movie. Kevin Costner, you know, had to first of all be convinced of the song, and then he had to convince Whitney. And when she heard it, man, she knew that was the one. And I'm writing a book about that now. Yeah, I'm working on a book about her funeral, how that I got this vision in her funeral of Jesus singing that song to his, yeah. First of all, Jesus could sing. Secondly, he's singing to them because they weren't understanding when he was saying it. So he said, if I should stay, I would only be in the way.
Yeah.
So I'll go. And yet I know I'll think of you every step of the way. Which, as we now, as we're speaking, this is Holy Week, you know, leading to Easter.
Yeah.
That's just a beautiful message. But to answer your question, that one, you kind of got the impression it was written by Dolly Parton. She had already sung it and it was a hit for her. So hearing Whitney do it, you're like, oh, this is going to be huge.
Yeah. Talk a little bit. I want to play your music, but this conversation is so good. I want to go down this path a little bit, because I've heard you speak before about your relationship with Whitney Houston. And you know, talk a little bit about that, because, you know, there was clearly a Whitney that you knew that many of us obviously didn't have a chance to know the way you knew her. And you talked about that sometimes in some of your shows.
Right. Well, I will say this. Folks who saw that movie, The Preacher's Wife, they saw, maybe inadvertently, they saw who she really was.
Okay.
She was. I mean, she's a church girl.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything around in her life revolved around that identity of loving Jesus, wanting to please her mother, who was also a superstar in the gospel, wanting to please Aretha and Dionne, all these amazing singers in her orbit, who all sang for God at one time. And that was who she was. And yet she was a girl, a round the way girl.
Uh-huh.
From Newark, New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's a part of that that she never, you know, she never lost. And some of us say she could never lose, you know, right? I don't know. Should she? Right. But that was definitely a part that became problematic. The stuff that she did there in the neighborhood growing up with her brothers, you know, became coping mechanisms later. Right. But yeah, she was an amazing person.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Because when I've heard you talk about it, you talk in such a loving tone, and like someone who clearly, like, I mean, I know your story, you were discovered really by Bob James, but, you know, you played with Whitney, you played for Luther. Like, I'm sure there's so many people that have had, you know, a lot of impact on your career. But the way you talk about Whitney is just special.
It is. And by the way, you know, I showed her this article, I guess the week I met her, in rehearsal. you know, now I'm her sax player. And I said, I got to show her this. Where someone asked me when I was 25 there in Houston, you know, in the local music scene there. I'm from Memphis, but Texas Southern. So now I'm in Houston. People ask me, who is the person you're trying to sound like, you know? And of course, they're thinking John Coltrane, Texas Southern's own Wilton Felder from the Crusade.
Oh, yeah.
Ronnie Laws, you know, these are the people who, you know, Grover Washington, these are people who truly inspired and impacted me. But they quoted me in that article and said, I want to play like Whitney Houston sings.
Wow.
Ever thought I would ever even, you know, bump into her, let alone get to know her playing with her. So that was really true, you know, and she, man, she called me Bishop. Like she, I had been praying that God show me my place in this situation. You know, I wanted to play the horn and, you know, let me pray with people. Let me do it. Cause I was doing Bible studies with, you know, other musicians, and he opened the door for me to do both those things. And when I prayed with her and with the band, that was it. From that point on, called me Bishop. That was my nickname. I did just about all the prayers when we were going on stage. She looked at me, Bishop.
That's awesome, man. That is awesome. Well, let's dig into a little bit of your music, man. Let's go to Humanité. How about we take a listen to Corgocho?
Yes.
Thank you. Everybody, that was today's guest, Kirk Whalum, off of his Humanité project with Cor Gocho. So I remember last time I had you on, we talked about Humanité project, and you were turning 60, and you were, I think I remember you making a comment that 2 weeks ago you were 40, and 2 weeks from now you felt like you were going to be 80. And so you were like, hey, I gotta go and scratch this itch I've had, right? And like, that was a huge, huge undertaking to go around the world and create this music with these young artists, right? So like, after that experience, like, I'm curious, like, of course we have the great music that came out of it, but what else did you, Kirk Whalum, the person, derive from that experience?
Yes. I drank all of their blood. And so I'm going to look like I'm 40. No, I mean, it was definitely my, you know, bucket list. I'm like, man, it's too early to be talking about bucket list, but I'm just nervous that this is not going to happen. Started out, I, you know, went and tried to get a French scholarship to study in Paris. I got it. I'm 19. I'm studying in Paris. All of a sudden, my world opens up. As it goes on, you know, I Bob James, you know, invites me to tour with him. I'm in Japan. I'm in Korea. I'm in Indonesia. I'm in, you know, all over Europe. And that did it for me. I want to be an international artist. And not a bad thing to want. It's also not something you can contrive. But when I saw 60 coming, it didn't bug me until this one night when I kind of sat up, as you remember, very, you know, eloquently put, like, I was like, oh, no, I'm not going to let 60 happen unless I have checked off some of these boxes. To go out and do collaborations with young artists in Paris, in England, in, you know, Nigeria, and, you know, what am I trying to say? Indonesia and South Africa, et cetera, and Kenya. And that's what I did. And that project is just, we actually did a documentary, which I mentioned back in the day, and it's available on Amazon in particular, but you can find it other ways. Humanité, like to spell humanity, take the Y off and then put an E with the accent.
Yeah. And I would encourage anyone who has not seen that documentary to go and check it out, because it's one of the things that I know for me, I'm always interested in the process, you know, what's happening behind the scenes and how it comes to being. But then too, a little bit of full circle here, because Get Your Wings Up, you did with Andrea Lisa. Was that like your introduction really to her as a collaborator? And now she's in your band and she's playing our festival in August as well. So
that's exactly what happened. She was the house band and on a cruise ship that I played when the Capitol Jazz Cruise took over this particular ship, you know, and there's this young lady in her band, and she knew who I was, and that kind of startled me. I'm like, she is way too young to know who I am. Like 23. And when she, you know, after she waited, she in the band waited around for us to finish sound check. Me, I could tell she was waiting because I was talking to somebody else. When I finished, I said, hi. And she said, Mr. Whalum. And she said, I, and then bursting in tears.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I'm like, oh, come here. You know, so like, she's like, I'm like, you know, comforting her on my shoulder. What's the mess? She said, no, I can't even tell you what your music has meant to me. And I'm like, really? You know, how interesting, you know, because my demographic is, I would like to think, is includes 22 and 23 year olds, but not a bunch. You know, but that is the secret sauce of this music, isn't it? It's like, because it's instrumental, it seeps through the crevices where, you know, if someone's singing in English and somebody over in New Guinea is in, or in, you know, Jakarta, then now you may or may not get in there. But with instrumental music, you can. And that is how I met her. And then I heard her play that song, you know, Get Your Wings Up. And I'm like, that's a hit. I'm like, come to Memphis, let's write something together. But yeah, we were messing around, but I'm like, I can't get that song out of my head.
That's cool. So I was watching, I think it was SportsCenter before I came to the studio today, and they were talking about people who had come off of football coaches tree, you know, like Andy Reid's coaching tree. And there's all these head coaches now that come off of Andy Reid's coaching tree. I think about somebody like Andrea, and I know there's others. Like, when you look at the impact you've had on other musicians, like, how does that, like, make you feel? And, like, how, like, do you ever take sit back and look back and say, I had this conversation with Bob James when we had him on the show a couple of years ago. You ever sit back and look at that and say, oh, my goodness, look at how those tentacles have just spread, you know?
Yeah, it is something, man. It's the passage of time, you know, how it's interesting how you never know how that's going to play out. That's why you have to just follow your path and you know, just remember that time can bring about some very crazy twists and turns where you look up and there you sit next to Stevie Wonder. Like, I was putting you know, I was putting his 8-track in my 1974 Impala.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, you look around and there he is, you know, and he's like, yeah. So, I mean, the funny thing and the sort of weird thing is when people call you, you know, like, man, you're a legend, you know, you OG. And that part is sometimes disconcerting because you go like, now, how did that happen? Like, I'm on this path trying to get somewhere. And then I look around and somebody's calling me a legend.
Yeah. But it's earned, though. I mean, you look at it. I mean, like, this is the industry that you work in is a tough industry. And it's a fickle. People are fickle. Like, our attention span, I know I can speak for myself. I ain't gonna talk about nobody but me. I know my attention span sometimes is not too long, right? And for someone to be able to capture your attention and to be able to keep you wanting to come back for more and more and more and more over such a extended period of time, that's a pretty amazing thing.
So, you know, that's the thing I'll say, that when you do the math and you sit up in a very candid, you know, with yourself moment, you mix this in with a humility that you're working on. You want to always be humble about this because, you know, it can be taken away in a minute. And also, mm-hmm. there's so many people who do this better than me. I mean, it's just a fact, you know, but you mix all that together and you're able to come out of that with just a sweet, you know, grace and an appreciation for the journey. Like,
yeah.
Wow. All those years, man, and at least I'm still doing it. And yeah, I look back and over 30 records, you're right, it's like, it's nuts when I think about that.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Hey, there's something that never came out. I'll tell you about it.
Huh.
Produced by Hubert Laws.
Uh-huh.
And Arista Records. It was right at the time Kenny G had just hit and they're like trying to replicate.
Oh, yeah.
And that record never came out. Thank God, it was terrible.
Huh.
But it broke my heart, man, because I put all my heart and soul into it. But it just wasn't time.
Wow. So you're going to be playing our Fresh Coast Jazz Festival in August, and we're super excited about that. I've seen you play lots of times, but I only remember, like, I saw you play once in Milwaukee many, many years ago. And you got on stage and you talked about your girlfriend, your lover, and your wife. And then you brought it home by talking about they're all the same person, your wife, Ruby. And I'm just curious, like, you talk about your wife in such glowing terms. And, you know, like I say about my wife, she is everything I never knew I always needed, you know. And like the role that your wife has played in your career, like, talk to us a little bit about that.
Man, oh, man. Now, that phrase you just used, I hear John Stoddard say that all the time about Helen.
Mm-hmm.
They've been together 25 years. But yeah, you're right, man. I'm just so overwhelmed when I think about, you know, our life together. You know, this morning, we have one of those finance meetings, which I hate.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm so grateful that, you know, she's like, okay, look, focus over here because we got to blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh.
And we prayed together.
Yeah.
Right. And that is our story. Like, she knows how desperately I need her. Like, you know, as the deer pants after the water brook is how I need God. But then short of that is my need for her, because she is the representative of God in my everyday life.
Yeah. Wow. That's a great sentiment. Representative of God in your everyday life.
Yes, sir. You know, and that is what we are to be to each other.
Mm-hmm.
A couples, you know. And, you know, it's like when I pray this prayer every morning for her. And French, I'll just do a short part of it.
Yeah.
Let me see. Que soit béni en esprit, en âme et en corps. You know, and in Spanish, I say, que ella sea bendecida en espíritu, en alma, en cuerpo. English, may she be blessed in spirit, in soul, and in body.
Wow.
And then I go from there, but it's funny, I hear her, the sound of the garage door, that's her coming home. But
okay.
That is not something that you can't take it for granted. There's intentionality that has to be in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
Godly mate, you know, where you say, I am not going to, you know, just assume that I have this, you know, that this will always be as it is today. I got to do my part that this day, God help me to be attentive to her. I say,
yeah.
Her needs, her desires,
yep.
Her, you know, weaknesses and strengths, her, her perspectives and her words. So mm-hmm. those are six things that I pray that I will be attentive to. So wow. As I'm praying for her, I'm also praying for me.
Yeah.
You know, so that I'm on top of that.
Yeah.
And that way when she says something, I go, and I'm paying attention.
Yeah. That's great. I mean, that's great wisdom, because I will tell you that's one thing that I have had to learn, is to be more attentive to my wife, right? And to be more in tune with what's important to her and where she is at a moment. Because I know my life would not be what my life is without my wife in it, right? And I understand that clearly. But I mean, fellas, for all of us out there, I know I can be hard-headed, we can be hard-headed, but listen to this knowledge that y'all getting today, because being in tune with your wife is an important aspect of your relationship.
Yes, sir, it is. And again, you know, just not taking it for granted.
Yeah, just, yeah.
You know, to be proactive about it.
That is wonderful. That is wonderful. I also remember from that time that you were in Milwaukee, you played a song that was from your time in France, Ma Foi, right? And I always loved that song. And it made me think about wanting to know a little bit more about the time you spent. Well, you spent time in France, and was it a year or two ago you went down to, South America, because you wanted to get a Spanish language immersion, right? Something like that. Talk to us about your travels through the world and your connection.
Absolutely. So I think I see two, speaking of Spanish.
Hey!
So a pajarito is a little birdie.
Are you calling?
Hi. Yeah, so how are you guys?
What's your name?
I'm Piper.
Nice to meet you, Piper.
My name is Perry.
Mm-hmm. Nice to meet you, Perry and Piper. Thanks
for you?
My name is Carl Brown. Nice to meet you guys.
Carl Brown.
Hey, go to the house and tell Mimi you can have one. You can have two each.
Okay.
Goodbye. See ya.
Bye. Nice to meet you guys. That's got to be pretty cool, the grandkids coming to the studio and hanging out.
Love it, love it, love it. You know, it just so happens that it was one of those days when we lend an assist to their mom, our daughter, Corey, and,
uh-huh.
you know, she took the chiropractor really bad, and we're like, we got them. And that's a blessing that they are here in Memphis.
Yeah, know? That is. Because your kids are... Some of them are in the music industry, and some of them are in different parts of the country, right? So,
right, Virginia and out in California, and
yeah,
I'm very grateful, man. You know, I can't even remember the question you asked me now. Cause it's like,
well, I was wanting to dig into a little bit your time in France and your time you went on this immersive. Spanish, I think it was Spanish language was what you were looking to improve upon your Spanish language skills recently. And I'm just curious about the impact of those times and those other countries on your life and your music and how you go about doing what you do.
Yeah, you know, el impacto en mi carrera, the impact of my career es mucho.
Huh.
Es, Y estoy aún en este momento, estoy practicando, you know, I'm practicing. Yo tengo ganas de comunicar en otros lenguajes. I desire to communicate in other languages, but it's hard because if you're not doing it all the time, or as they say, yeah, you know, it's always a challenge. But, you know, to say that the impact of studying in other countries, which is what I did in France too, and ultimately we moved there, our four kids, so that they could also have that experience. The impact is profound on the way that I do life, the way, you know, that what makes me tick, etc. But man, you know, we studied in Guatemala and then also in Costa Rica. And,
okay.
I got to tell you, man, and the cultures are so amazing, not to mention the food. But yeah, to try to get your head around another language, it's brutal in one sense, because, you know, you think, oh, man, I'm doing great. You know, I just got these sentences and the grammar and these, and then you start talking to somebody and you're like,
yeah, yeah.
You'll say nada. It's humbling.
Yeah, I can imagine that it is. I have some experience with French, but I tell you, I was never that terribly good at it. And I think the way you've done it, this immersive thing, is kind of the way you got to do it if you really want to be good at it, right? Because you got to put yourself out there and learn it as you need to.
It's as simple as that. I mean, we're blessed here in this country to have immigrants who can help us.
Yeah, yeah.
Immigrants who can help us.
Yes.
And that is a political statement.
Yes.
you know, but even then, if you know you're in a context, an English speaking context,
yeah,
you know, still you can always kind of vacillate and go back to the English word. But when you're over there, you can't do that because
right.
They don't speak.
Right.
Primarily don't speak. Or they choose not to because you're in an immersion, you know, setting. And they're like, nope. No podemos hablar inglés. We can't speak English.
And I'm going to touch on your political statement for a moment here, too, because we are a country of immigrants who has forgotten that we're a country of immigrants, which blows my mind.
There are people who vehemently reject that truth.
Yeah, that truth,
I'm trying to understand what cosmos are you living in when you can't see.
Yeah,
that America is a country of immigrants. How can you not see that? I mean, we're not going to talk about the Native Americans, but man, I mean, there's a new movie out about this Italian nun who was just a force of nature in this country. And she was just talking about it in the early 20th century, you know, that she took a stand and she got in there and she got her hands dirty to advocate for the poor. And like these are things that people come from these other countries and they have all the difficulty and harshness of that journey, you know, but they're still willing to make this country better. And then you got people who say, we don't want you here.
Yeah. Which is heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
Who is we? That's the problem.
Yeah. 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 That's so true. That is so true. Well, let's take a listen to another song. How about we take a listen to one that I have heard you do live and it's always a lot of fun here. Let's listen to Blow For You.
Got it.
I want to know you.
All right. That was our guest today, Kirk Whalen, with the song Blow For You.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites that I hear you play live. That one is one of my favorites I hear you play live. Can't Stay Blue is another one that I hear you when like there's, you know, when I hear you play that live, I just, you know, at the end of me, Lord, I found you. You know, those are great words.
So, you know, the song, people, you know, sometimes my stuff is sort of nestled into other formats and other messages. But, you know, I see you, you know, I want to be with you. I want to know you. Can I blow for you? So basically, God is saying to us, I see you, you know, I want to know you intimately. I want to be there with you and for you and in you. And then we our lives are transformed and we turn around and we say, well, you know what? I want to do what I do, which in my case is blow a saxophone, and I blow for you. And that's what that song is about. People are like, oh man, this is groovy. This is groovy. But like, yeah, if you drill down, there's a message.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, as there is in so much of your music. So I'm going to ask you one last question, Kirk. I appreciate your time today. What advice would you give your 13-year-old self about life?
Woo! That's a good question, man. I think the main one is, do you?
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
holistic and maybe even a little narcissistic, but God put something specific and unique and important in you, Carl.
Yes.
And everybody who's listening.
Yes.
You got to do that thing. You got to figure it out as soon as you possibly can. And you have to begin to refine whatever that is.
Yeah.
So that God is pleased and that people are edified. If I can help somebody as I travel along, then my living is not in vain.
There you go. Wow, man. That's rich. That's rich. That's deep. And I just want to thank you for taking time to be with us today. It is always a pleasure. We are so looking forward to having you in Milwaukee in August. And I know fans in Milwaukee are already talking to me about, ooh, Kirk's coming to town. I'm getting my tickets. I'm going to be there, you know. And so I had a guy call me the other day saying, I'm taking my son-in-law. We get in front row seats. I want to impress him by taking him to see Kirk Whalen. So Milwaukee is ready for you, man. So we can't wait to have you.
So I speak for my band and myself when I say we truly are looking forward to this. You know, if I got a call from Kansas City or whatever, I would say, yeah, we're looking forward to it. But we are truly looking forward to being in Milwaukee. And that's not just because Al Jarreau is from there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But because last time we played there was memorable, and I know this will be too.
It will indeed. Well, thank you again, Kirk.
Bless you, my brother.
All right. Get your tickets now for the 2024 Fresh Coast Jazz Festival, August 22nd through 24th. We have great music and great events planned for you. Not only will you get to enjoy performances by Kirk Whalen, Boney James, Kim Scott, Andrea Lisa, Marcus Adams, Dee Lucas, Lamech, Quentin Gerard W., Ryan LaValette, and Nathan Mitchell, but we also have some unique events like the Fresh Coast Cruise and the Pairing, which is this really cool and really fun concert and wine tasting, all mixed together, set to the music of Grover Washington Jr. Tickets are on sale now at freshcoastjazz.com. That's our show for this week. Be sure to check out our website, freshcoastjazz.com, to sign up for our email list so you can stay up on what's going on with contemporary jazz. We'll see you next time on Fresh Coast Jazz Backstage.